Gates was persistent in his pursuit of Burgoyne. Take a look at the map on the website. You can see how Gates intended to encircle Burgoyne in an area that extended from here in Victory Woods to the north end of what is now Schuylerville Central School. They were bound by the Hudson to the east and Fish Creek to the south and west.
So Burgoyne's army took up lots of space.
Right. Now they had to dig in for however long they had left.
All thoughts of a retreat were then given over, and a determination made to fall nobly together rather than disgrace the name of British troops, on which we immediately changed our ground a little, and under the protection of that night began to entrench ourselves, all hands being ordered to work. We were called together and desired to tell our men that their own safety as well as ours depended on their making a vigorous defense. But that, I was sure, was an unnecessary caution, well knowing they would never forfeit the title of soldiers.
They may have been wet and frozen and starved, but even so, I'm impressed by Digby's pride and the dignity of the British soldiers. Grandpa, I don't want to know the answer, but I gotta ask, what about the animals, the horses and cows? Do they have any left?
They had oxen for hauling, horses for the officers, and cows for meat.
We were obliged to bring our oxen and horses into our lines, where they had the wretched prospect of living but a few days, as our grass was all gone, and nothing after but the leaves of the trees for them. Our cattle began to die fast, and the stench was very prejudicial in so small a space.
Oh my gosh!
Remember how Burgoyne planned to lay siege to the rebels at Ticonderoga by starving them out or overtaking them by force? Well, now the same thing was happening to him.
We now began to perceive their design by keeping at such a distance, which was to starve us out. I believe the general's greatest wish, as indeed it ought to be, was for them to attack us, but they acted with much greater prudence. They also knew exactly the state of our provisions, which was sufficient for but 4 or 5 days more.
Why would Burgoyne want them to attack?
Well, because now Burgoyne had the advantage of choosing his own ground and was fairly well defended. He was already on the retreat, so this could have given him a chance to go out with a blaze of glory. But things were in dire confusion as there was mass desertion and desperation among the troops.
The greatest misery and the utmost disorder prevailed in the army. The commissaries had forgotten to distribute provisions among the troops. There were cattle enough, but not one had been killed. More than 30 officers came to me who could endure hunger no longer. I had coffee and tea made for them and divided among them all the provisions with which my carriage was constantly filled.
There seems to be quite a division between the baroness having constant food and the soldiers having none.
Wait, Marshal, listen to her next entry.
At last, my provisions were exhausted. And in despair at not being able to be of any further help, I called to me Adjutant General Patterson, who happened at that moment to be passing by, and said to him passionately, "Come and see for yourself these officers who have been wounded in the common cause, and who now are in want of everything because they do not receive that which is due them. It is therefore your duty to make a representation of this to the general."
You mean the Baroness was demanding that the Adjutant General ask Burgoyne to feed his troops?
Mm-hmm.
So did he speak to Burgoyne?
A quarter of an hour afterward, General Burgoyne came to me himself and thanked me very pathetically for having reminded him of his duty. He added, moreover, that a general was much to be pitied when he was not properly served nor his commands obeyed. I replied that I begged his pardon for having meddled with things which I well knew a woman had no business with, but that it was impossible to keep silent when I saw so many brave men in want of everything and had nothing more to give them.
Good for the Baroness. I bet that didn't happen much for a woman to question a general. That's pluck.
You bet. This was how the Brits were surrounded. Look at the map. Morgan and his riflemen crossed Fish Creek south of Victory Woods and were positioned to the west. John Stark took post in Fort Edward after the success at Bennington, making the old Fort House his headquarters and renaming it Fort Stark. He then proceeded up to a bluff to the north that was later named Stark's Knob. to prevent the British retreat northward to Lake George. Gates took up a new headquarters just south of the Schuyler House on Route 4, and General Fellows occupied the Heights on the opposite side of the river, occupying the road and both sides of the Baton Kill. From here, the cannons could reach the Marshall House, where...
Immediately after our arrival, a frightful cannonade began, principally directed against the house in which we had sought shelter. Probably because the enemy believed, from seeing so many people flocking around it, that all the generals made it their headquarters. Alas, it harbored none but wounded soldiers or women. We were finally obliged to take refuge in a cellar, in which I laid myself down in a corner not far from the door. My children laid down on the earth with their heads upon my lap. And in this manner we passed the entire night. The women and children, being afraid to venture forth, had soiled the whole cellar.
I think we saw that house on the way here.
Correct, Marshal. The home is currently privately owned, but he welcomes people to contact him for a tour of his historic home. Burgoyne still held out hope that Henry Clinton would do something to alleviate the siege upon his army at Victory Woods, and even the Americans had considered that a possibility. Here's what one American said.
We have been trembling alive to this menacing prospect, but our fears are in measure alleviated by the following singular incident. After the capture of Fort Montgomery, Sir Henry Clinton dispatched a messenger by the name of David Taylor to Burgoyne with the intelligence. Fortunately, he was taken on his way as a spy, and finding himself in danger, he was seen to turn aside and take something from his pocket and swallow it. General George Clinton, into whose hands he had fallen, ordered a severe dose of emetic tartar to be administered. This produced the happiest effect as respects the prescriber, but it proved fatal to the patient. He discharged a small silver bullet, which, being unscrewed, was found to enclose a letter from Sir Henry Clinton to Burgoyne. The spy was tried, convicted, and executed. The following is an exact copy of the letter enclosed.
Unbelievable! This is better than a movie! What did the letter say? Wait, I found it. Here we are, and nothing now between us and Gates. I sincerely hope this little success of ours may facilitate your operations. In answer to your letter of the 28th of September by Captain Campbell, I shall only say I cannot order or even advise for reasons obvious. I heartily wish you success.
The rebels knew something that Burgoyne didn't. Clinton had made his attack on Fort Montgomery, but didn't plan on proceeding any further.
There was no help on its way.